We're doing Pirkei Avot together with the Jewish home. We're up to the fourth chapter, the first Mishnah. We had begun the Mishnah last week, where Ben Zoma, we discussed the Shimon Ben Zoma, but he died young and he never merited to get smichas. That's why we call him after his father's name. He taught us, Ezeu Chacham, who's a wise man, alomed mikol adam, specifically he who learns from all others, as the verse says, mikol melamdai iskalti keidotecha sichali. And we were up to Ezeu Gibor Kovesh Titzro. We concluded our discussion last week. You remember I told you two stories. I told you, tell me which one is true. The Shabaknik or the Mossadnik. You guys remember the story. Ezeu Gibor Kovesh Titzro. Shenemar Tov Erechapai Migibor Moshel Beruchom Miluchay Deir. That a person who has patience, a person who conquers his spirit, is more powerful than one who conquers a city. And we're picking up in the middle of the Mishnah, Ezeu Ashir. Who is a wealthy person? So the Mishnah doesn't say Bill Gates. The Mishnah doesn't say the wealthy people of their day, Nakdimon Ben Gurion, Ben Kalba Savua. No, it says, you want to know who's a wealthy person? Hasameach Bechelko. One who's happy in his portion. And then it quotes a pasuk, which we'll discuss in a minute. So one of the challenges of our generation is being happy. Seems like we're a very unhappy generation. And if we'll note, the Mishnah tells us that a person is wealthy when he is happy. Bechelko. What does the word chelko mean? With his portion. Meaning, he doesn't have the whole cake. You ask him, he'll tell you, but there's more out there, and I could have more. And do I want more or don't I want more? I always want more. If you always want more, then you're never going to be happy. And it doesn't matter what you got. Because whatever you got is always chelko. It's always your part. But it's always a part. There's always more to get out there. And the Mishnah says, you want to be wealthy, you have to be happy with your part. But it's always going to be part. And there's always going to be more. So how could I be happy? And the answer is, happiness is your choice. Oh, there are things that make it easier. It's hard to be happy when a person's starving to death. It's hard to be happy when a person's tortured to death. There are a lot of things that make it difficult to be happy. But happiness is a choice. One of the happiest people I merited to see was the wife of one of the rabbeim in this yeshiva, who was diagnosed with terminal cancer and was making her rounds with the medicinal clown in the hospital to make other patients happy. And she was probably, I don't know if the happiest or one of the happiest people I ever met. And she was suffering. I mean, she had a lot of little children at home. And she knew she wasn't going to see them married off. And she was happy. And she would go to the hospital, and while she was waiting, she'd go and see how she could make other patients happy. And when the cancer was in her leg, when she had to stop using that leg, so she got a scooter, she could put that leg on, and then she'd scoot around with her other good leg to go and make other patients happy. And when she went into the cancer ward and she tried to make patients happy, sometimes patients would tell her, well, it's easy for you to be so cheerful, you don't know what it's like. And she did know, because this was the third or fourth time she had cancer, and this time they had no cure. And you wouldn't tell, you couldn't tell. Till her last days, you couldn't tell. Because happiness is a choice. And the question is, am I going to look at it and say, well, that's my lot, so I can be whole with it, or that's my lot, and gee, I'm really upset with my lot. One of the amazing things was to see her husband, too. This is a couple who was happy until almost their last moment. I told you guys the story about the trip to the ocean? No? Well, they once had to go to some medical expert in Tel Aviv, and I don't remember why it was necessary for me to come along. I don't remember the logic behind it, but for whatever reason, my 2 cents were deemed worthwhile, so I came along. I don't remember why. Okay, but at any rate, I don't know. At any rate, I came along, and I got really carsick along the way. And I'm supposed to sit in on this meeting with the top specialist in this field of cancer. So, okay, we get to the guy, and I'm they had to stop like 5 blocks away from the hospital just for me to go out and I was car sick. Fine, we get there, and I, you know how sometimes you can hold yourself back, and I'm sitting through the meeting taking notes, and we finish the meeting, and we gotta head back, and I'm not looking forward to the ride back, and as we get into the car, she says, maybe we'll go by the ocean. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm really sorry. I can't have a longer trip. And I said, look, I'm really sorry, but I'm not sure how many times I'm going to throw up this ride. But, I, you know, if you're prolonging it, then there's a chance I'm not going to be able to hold it down. So she said, okay, fine, never mind. And then I said to myself, you know, that's not nice of me. She wants to see the ocean, you know, they should go to the ocean. So I said, okay, you know what, go to the ocean. She said, no, I just wanted to get the bracha on the ocean. I just want to see it, to make that bracha. You make a bracha, a special blessing, when you see the ocean. And it struck me, look, you know, I'm thinking the ocean, I'm thinking, she wants the breeze, she wants the walk, she wants something, and but she sees the world through different eyes. She sees the world through a world where there are opportunities in the world, and we have an opportunity. We're in Tel Aviv, we could go and make another blessing. Now, it's interesting, very often when you meet couples, they explain to you why they're unhappy. And I have a questionnaire I sometimes give couples. And one of the questions I write is, what do you want from your spouse? And very often what they write is, to make me happy. And to my mind, that means they don't understand what marriage is all about. He will not make you happy, and she won't make you happy. You have to decide. Happiness is your choice, because he's still going to be human, and he's still going to have his faults. Even if he's going to work on being a better husband, she's still going to be human, and she's going to have her faults. And the person who's going to suffer most from our faults is our own spouse. And that's just the way it's going to be. So I'm not talking about a spouse who's doing inhumane things to his wife, you know. Okay, if he ties her up and starves her 3 days a week, you know, I understand. She's unhappy. There's a problem there, right? But within the norm of married life, you know what? It's a person's choice. And there are always going to be good reasons why I am unhappy. Why I didn't get my lot. I only got this much. And it's our choice. Yes, we each try to become a better spouse. But yes, every husband and every wife has real legitimate claims about why they're going to be unhappy. But you know what? You can say the same thing about all of life. And the funny thing is that every couple sees it about themselves. Every couple can explain to you why they have issues. I got off a bus and I was walking the same direction as a rabbi who... I really admire him, so I seized the opportunity to walk with him, and I asked him, what's the best advice you give couples when they come to you with marital issues? So he said to me, the best advice is that he looks at them and he says, you guys have marital issues? You know that you have it better than most couples in the world? I just look at them and I start to point out what's good in their marriage. And very often he says, once someone points out to them what's actually good in their life, they can walk back home and work out their differences themselves. The question is, what am I looking at? And very often we're very focused on what we don't have. And one of the hardships, one of the things that makes it very difficult to appreciate what we have, is that we have this imagination of what other people have. And we have this imagination of what our parents had. We'll begin with our parents, because that's the more difficult one. We tend to forget that we started perceiving our parents' marriage when we were about 10 or 15, and they knew one another for many years already. And they had already gone through a lot of the squabbles and reached a certain plateau. And so very often we could look at our parents' marriage and say, my mother never spoke to my father that way. You weren't around when she did. Don't worry. In 15 years, your wife won't talk to you that way either. Give yourself time. Very often, what we see is we see that our marriage isn't what we think is going on in other people's homes. And usually it is. Usually we just don't know, because you'll ask other people, they'll tell you that your marriage looks perfect. and they won't believe that A, B, and C is what's going on behind the closed doors. So it's very interesting that whenever I get to speak at Sheva Brachos, I always discuss the dreams that couples have. And I always mention one dream, and I say that is the dream to have a peaceful Friday afternoon as Shabbos enters, to enter Shabbos with tranquility. And the couple almost always looks at one another and smiles, and I know that that's something they've discussed when they were dating or that they really expect. And I also know that that's something that they did not see at home. But they're going to consider it a failure if their Friday afternoon looks like everyone else's Friday afternoon, that the house is a mad rush and everyone's yelling at everyone and it's not exactly the way you imagine Shabbos should enter a Jewish home. Well, you're right. We all aspire to make it better, and Bezrat Hashem will all succeed. But you know what? Most of us don't get there so fast. It takes us about 50 years marrying off the kids, getting them out of the house, and then, yeah, we could be ready 3 hours early and have a calm and peaceful Shabbos and assume that now we've figured it out. Or maybe life is just easier because now you don't have a kid soiling a diaper 2 minutes before you have to light a candle, and then another kid who suddenly needs your attention. Normal life in a household means that there are going to be disruptions, and things don't go as smoothly, especially when there's the time factor. It's like the morning. Everyone wants to have a calm and peaceful morning. Great. If you don't have a deadline, if you don't have to get their job, yeah, everything could be calm and peaceful. If you don't have to get the kids to school at a specific time, everything could be calm and peaceful. But if there's a bus to catch, if there's a deadline, then the nature of things is that the kid's going to daydream and take his time, and you as a parent are going to be a little pressured to get him to make that deadline, or you to make that deadline. But then the question is, how do we look at it? And part of that question is, what do we imagine the norm should be? So very often what we have to do is stop and say, this is chelko, this is my chelek. And the prime difference, to my mind, between couples that are happy and couples that are unhappy is the question of this attitude. Is my attitude, well, things should be different here, things should be better here, and then I'm very unhappy with what I have. Because I'm very frustrated that I can't get it better. But if my attitude is, it's normal that my wife comes down hard on me. Let me tell you a story. Husband has a row with his wife. So you know we have laws of family purity. And according to those laws, we trust the wife. When she says she's pure, then the couple can be intimate and they're allowed to touch and the beds can be together and everything's normal. And when the couple is prohibited, she has her period, or after she's had her period until she passes the 7 clean days where she keeps checking herself. So it's about 12, 13 days a month, and then she goes and immerses in the mikvah waters, and then the couple can again be intimate. But during those 12, 13 days, they don't pass things hand to hand, they don't touch, and obviously they're not intimate. So there's this rabbi who's respected by everyone, huge Talmud Chacham, and his wife is upset at him. So she tells him, I'm a nida. Okay. Halachically, that's it. You know, for 13 days, it's over. She calms down a few hours later. She comes back and says, I was kidding. Now, what do you say? Is that normal? Is that not normal? Halachically, can they get out of it? So you know what? The Talmud tells us there was a rabbi named Rav. He was Rebbe's disciple. He was one of the giants of Jewish history. And his wife did it to him not once, but twice. And they couldn't get out of it. So he asked me, is that normal? And I say, yes, everything's normal. I mean, short of beating one another, the fact that she used the halachic tool and she really put a strain on their marriage for those 14 days, that's no fun. You know. Technically, biologically, there's no problem there. But halachically, she just put us in a problem, you know. And it's worse than that, because if you think about it, by the time she becomes pure, she's probably had her period, so they could be prohibited for a whole month with just because she said something stupid. Yet the Talmud says, Rav's wife did it in twice. Okay. So I had a husband once who came to me, his wife did it to him. So I said to him, if it's the first time, you're still ahead of Rav, okay? The problem is that we have this picture that, you know, if you do that, that's not normal. And the answer is no, there's a lot that's very normal. There's a lot that's normal. Now, guys, I'm telling you, there's a lot that your wives do that's normal. People sometimes ask me why my stories revolve around women. And the answer is because I'm talking to men. So I'm not going to tell you guys that it's normal for you to be bums. No, you guys have to be nice and fine and refined and caring and work on yourselves to be better. If I were talking to women, so then my stories would be different. But my goal here is to get you guys, you know, the key in marriage is to give as much as you can and accept whatever comes in return, which will be the next line in the Mishnah in a second. But part of it is being samech b'chelko, and part of samech b'chelko is being able to look at it and be whole with what I see. Not live with these fantasies that, well, no one else is bearing what I'm bearing. No, believe me, you just don't know. You don't know. We once had a guy, oh, I could tell you a lot of stories, but we don't have time. And anyways, I don't want to scare you. Marriage is the most beautiful thing on the planet. We just have to realize that it's beautiful with the challenges. And the second we could enter marriage, that's what I said is, to my mind, the prime differences between happy couples and unhappy couples. If I can enter the marriage and say, this is great, this is normal, this is fine, then I can be happy. If I walk in and I say, this is chalko, God, this is what you had in mind for me, come on, no one else is dealing with this, then I'm never going to be happy. And you know what? Every marriage can go both ways. Every single marriage on the planet. If you hear a husband saying, my wife is amazing, first of all, it's a stupid thing to say. It's no one else's business. Say it to her. Say it to her parents. Say it to your parents. But don't tell it to other people. You know, that's part of what we discussed earlier, that sometimes people have a warped picture of marriage because of what other people tell them. So it's a stupid thing to say. You shouldn't be telling other people how amazing your wife is. Be happy for yourself. Ezu Ashir, who is a wealthy person in every area of life, Hasamech Bechalko. And if you think about it, you have people who say, I can't be happy now. I don't have a license yet. You get a license, I can't be happy now. I don't have a job yet, you know, so I have a license, but I can't pay the gas bills. I can't go wherever I want. You get a job, you say, I can't be happy now. What am I working for? I don't have a wife yet. You get a wife, you say, I can't be happy now. I don't have kids yet. You have kids, you say, they're not letting me sleep. How could I be sane and normal? You know what it's like raising kids? You know, this is sleep deprivation. It's a torture tactic. You know, in the FBI, this would be prohibited. But my kids do it to me every night. How could I be happy? Oh, no, the answer is that life is one long path. It's true that every step has its joys. But we have to be able to take the stage we're in today and see the happiness in it, and see the happiness in Chelko. Because if I'm only going to keep waiting, then you know what? I'm going to wait my whole life for that moment that happiness will hit me. It's my choice to be happy in the stage that I'm in today. And that's true for marriage, too. There are the beauties of the first year when there aren't yet kids, and there are the difficulties of the first year when there aren't yet kids. And then there are the beauties of the later years, where we hope God blesses a couple and they have children, and there are the difficulties of the later years. And we have to be able to see the beauty in each stage. Now, going back to the point that one of the great difficulties in marriage is what we hear from other people, this really augments itself. Your wife is sitting Thursday night, we'll give a woman example, because this happens more frequently with women, that's the truth. She's sitting Thursday night, and you went out to learn with us later this past Thursday night. You're learning till 2 o'clock in the morning. We had a great learning. I mean, Baruch Hashem, this past Thursday night, we covered a lot. So, your wife is home, and she calls up her first friend as she's putting up the chont, and she's mixing the chont, and that friend says, you know, my husband's washing the floor right now, so I can't go get that cookbook for the recipe. And down goes one flag of yours, and your wife says, her husband's washing the floor. My husband's not even home helping. Okay? She keeps mixing the chont. She ends the conversation with that one, and she says, you know, I really got to go. We're going to sleep now. I mean, your wife looks at her watch. She says, 9:30, you guys are going to sleep? And she says, yeah, me and my husband, we try to finish everything early Thursday nights. So we could get to bed early so we have more coffee for Shabbos. And then flag number two goes down for you. Your wife says, my husband's out there learning Torah, and I'm here cooking, I'm doing all the work alone, and I'm going to get to bed with him at 2 o'clock in the morning. Okay. She hangs up the phone with that friend. She calls up the next friend. You know, women like to talk as they work. The Gemara tells us that. So, okay, she calls up the next friend. And the next friend says, you know, I really got to go peel the potatoes. My husband's almost ready with the chont, and I didn't finish peeling the potatoes. And your wife says, what? And she says, yeah, my husband is the one who makes the chont. I peel the potatoes. So now your flag three goes down. She's like, I'm slaving over the chont, and her husband's doing that. Okay, fine. You can imagine that as the night goes on, your flags are being waved down. And by the time you come home, your wife has a whole long list. She's built this Superman model, you understand? Every friend told her another thing that her husband is doing. And by the time you come home, she's looking at you and she's like, you didn't do the floors, right? You're like, no, I wasn't home. How could I do the floors? And you didn't do the chont, right? No, I wasn't home. How could I do the chont? You didn't peel the potatoes either, you bum. What did I do? Didn't you want me to go learn tonight? Yeah, I did. But how come everyone else is getting all this help and I'm not? Well, it's very easy for that to happen. If I keep hearing and picking up what's going on around me, so then what happens is I take all the good from everyone else, and then I look at what I got, and I say, you don't compare to any of that. Well, you don't know. Maybe you're doing a million other things that they're not doing. Meaning, it's not even a fair comparison. But the first problem is that it's not samech v'chalko. It's that I'm looking at everyone else's portion. And when I'm looking at everyone else, so then, you know what? Everyone else, the grass is always greener, because all I see is the green of the grass. I don't see it as clearly as I see mine. The Mishnah continues and says, how do I know that a wealthy person is he who is happy with his own lot? Shenemar, as the verse says, Yegia kapecha, the toil of your palms, ki tochel, for you will consume, you will reap the rewards. Ashrecha betovlach, praised are you and it's good for you. Ashrecha ba'olam hazeh, praised are you in this world, v'tovlach la'olam haba, and it's good for you in the world to come. And the pasuk that we quoted is when you're toiling. Our imagination of the good life is when I finish working, I have $1 million on the side and I'm sitting on the Bahamas with a Cuban cigar and who knows what else, right? Okay, I know what the good life is. No, you don't know what the good life is. The good life is you have a job. Yegia kapecha, when King David wants to describe the good life, he describes you work and you enjoy what you're working. You get to enjoy what you're doing. Because as we described before, if my focus is when I get to reap the rewards, I'll be happy. That's wrong. You'll never be happy. Happiness is about being happy now, not waiting for rewards in the future. And then, it's good for you in the world to come, because a person who's focused on how everyone else has it better, that's the biblical prohibition, one of the Ten Commandments, lo tachmod, don't covet what others have, and that is at the root of transgressing all sins. As some of the commentaries over there write, that is the worst sin. And it's not that specifically is the worst sin, to my mind, but rather that leads to everything else. That is at the root of the worst sins. A person could look at it and say, I wish I had a better job, or a person could say, thank God I have a job. When the Mishnah wanted to quote a verse about having it good, it describes a verse where you're working. You have a job and you enjoy what you're getting from your job. The Mishnah concludes, Eizeu mechubad, who is an honored person? Hamchabedet abiriyot, one who honors God's creations. Shenemal, the verse says, Kim chabdai chabedu v'zai yikalu. God says, I honor those who honor me and those who deride. They are taken lightly as well. This is another great peeve that husbands have in the house. No respect. Well, how much do you give? The Mishnah tells us the formula. You want honor, give honor. Honor is something that cannot be acquired. It's something that can be given. And if you give it, you'll get it. So people sometimes say, if I'll give it, it'll go to her head. Don't worry about it. You're going to have a much better marriage if you can really honor. And the Rambam writes this too. And we have this halacha. You know, the halacha describes lahavdil. We won't compare, but this is an interesting formula Maimonides has in a relationship between a master and a slave. The master has to treat the slave like a brother. The slave has to treat him like a master. So you understand, if the master walks in and says, he's not treating me like a master. Well, you can't take that treatment. What did the Rambam say? You treat him like a brother. Yeah, the focus is on what I'm supposed to give. And what I'm supposed to receive, that'll come by default. You know, the rabbi once gave a class and he said, if you run away from honor, it'll come after you. So A few weeks later, one of the constituents comes to the rabbi and says, "Rabbi, I've been running away and it ain't following." So the rabbi says, "Yeah, because you're running away, but you keep looking over your shoulder to see if it's behind you." Now, it doesn't work that way. You got to really run away from it. And here, we're not talking about running away from it. We're talking about really giving it, really valuing. And this is one of the great challenges that couples have. Very often, husbands want to show their wife how smart they are, how good they are, what kind of tzaddik they are. And really, the second a couple enters this stage of competition, it goes the other way. It's interesting, the Avos Rabbi Nosson on the Mishnah of Al Talbesi Chaim Aisha, don't talk too much idle chatter with your wife. So one of the examples it gives is don't go quoting to her the arguments you have and how smart you were outsmarting your friend and stuff like that. Because at the end of the day, she'll value you less and your friend less, and everyone goes down in her eyes. You're trying to put yourself up in her eyes, rest assured it's going to work the other way around. The Mishnah says, give honor. Give honor. If you give honor, you receive honor. If you can keep pointing out how much you appreciate and how valuable your spouse is to you and how you value them, then they will value you in turn. And if we had more time, there are two levels. This works really on two levels. We'll say it in a nutshell. No, we won't do justice in a nutshell. We'll have to deal with it a different time. Okay, to be continued, Bezalel Hashem.